You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. The show is called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're here every Monday in Cocoa, Florida from 1 to 2. Show is fun, unscripted, very informative, and quite educational. I am pleased to have Ellen Little co-hosting with me as usual.
Happy April.
Thank you, Ellen. Did you make any April Fool's jokes yesterday?
As many as I could.
I didn't. I worked yesterday. I worked on Easter Sunday, and I was very happy to be with my residents at the nursing home. That was really fun.
Nice.
We have an action-packed show today. We've got Mayor Andrew Gilliam calling in, and he is running for the governor for the state of Florida. He's going to be a fresh approach to solving problems in our state and get our government back on track.
Amen.
And so I'm excited about that.
I'm excited to hear from him, too.
Yes, and I've met him quite a few times, and he reminds me of a lot of the people back home. He does. People who just want to give back to the community. People who were raised in situations that they did not have the opportunity that everybody else did, but they took the opportunity once given to them and ran with it.
Awesome.
And they want to share that with everybody else as well.
And he's in Tallahassee, correct?
That's right. And he's going to be calling in. We also have with us on our second segment, Mr. Bill Cox, who is with the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary. And he's going to be speaking with us today about boating safety and about the waterways. Welcome to our show, Mr. Cox.
Thanks, Sita. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and his name is easy to say.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. we pray for people named Smith.
Right. Yeah, we do. And so before Mayor Gilliam calls in, I wanted to say, Ellen, I've been watching CNN, and I tuned it off for a while because I worked Easter Saturday and Easter Sunday, and I was tired by the time I went home. But I did get little glimpses of what happened in Sacramento, California, with this gentleman, Stephen Clark, was shot in his grandmother's backyard. And I just want to say, you know, all of us talk about gun safety, and we talk about life and how precious life is from the minute you're born until the minute God takes you home. But I was just thinking, you know, one of the things that I think we could try to implement with law enforcement and in the police departments would be, when you shoot somebody, maybe they shouldn't shoot to kill unless the person has an armed, you know, unless they have like an AR rifle or they have like a gun pointed at the police,
right.
You know, like maybe to hurt them, but not to kill them.
Right.
You
and,
know?
And I always assume that that's the way it should have been. Like you're trying to debilitate them.
Right.
So that you can do what you need to do, but not necessarily shooting to kill.
Right. It's
unless
like,
you're in
and you have
danger.
To have, so maybe like significant training procedures. A better police force training. Sometimes I think community policing also help, and also dollars to do all of this.
Right.
And when I say community policing, I remember being a young child back home, and we would know when somebody in our village became a policeman. We would know when someone became a teacher. We would know when someone's child had the opportunity to go abroad and become a physician or go to the University of the West Indies or whatever. But the thing is, you had a connection with that person.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were from your area, your community,
and
you
I grew
knew
up,
them.
Right,
you know?
And I grew up in an inner city, you know, unlike the islands, and we, all the police officers and the priests
they
used
knew
to play
each other.
Hand,
right.
Well, they used to play handball with us,
right.
You know, as kids. We would, you know, all the Jesuit priests would come out, because that was all that was in the area, and then the police department would come out, and they'd come play for half an hour.
Right, and you know, if the police is from that area, he would know that some of the people, well, maybe they do knock on grandma's back door to get in. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was just, I was a little saddened about that because it seems to be happening so much. And, you know, we all talk about life and how precious life is, but I do believe, like, at the end of the day, everyone wants to be loved and appreciated. And no matter which culture you come from, which race or what religion you are, that's the role. I mean, you're born and it's so beautiful to wake up every day and be able to use the senses that God gave you, the sense to see and hear and feel and talk and communicate with each other. So I do believe that we need to have more conversations with each other and more communication, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Would you agree with that, Bill? And Bill looks so striking in his uniform sitting next to us in a Coast Guard uniform. It's awesome.
Well, and we'd be remiss if we didn't thank Bill for your service because you're a retired Navy as well.
Well, sure. Well, thank you very much.
So we will make sure that in the second segment, we'll be talking about all of that.
Right. And so I think we have on the phone our friend Andrew Gilliam is calling in. But before I take his call, I just wanted to tell you one more thing I saw on CNN this morning was about this big, beautiful wall. And it looks like it's not happening right now. But I'm a little sad that nothing has been done for the DACA kids.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't want to be one of those children. The anxiety of whether you're staying or going, or can you go to school? Can you get a job? I mean, it's just too much.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know. I wished people would move in the right direction with that as well.
Yeah.
So we have Andrew Gilliam, who's running for the governor to rebuild Florida, a state that works for everyone. And, you know, I heard him speak in Miami, and one of the things he said, which struck me as, wow, this guy is saying what people need to hear and what we all should be doing is jobs with benefits. I mean, how that is so interesting, to just that those three words, right? And that's what we all want when we wake up, right? And he talked about the economy and healthcare and education and the environment and rights and everything. And I thought I should have him on the show. So thank you for calling in, Mayor Gilliam. Thank you for calling in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Sita, thank you so much for the invitation. I know you were just wrapping up the conversation on DACA and the important protections that these students deserve. And I just want to add my voice of support to that we have too many of our kids who all they have done is applied themselves. They have shown up at school. They have achieved beyond many expectations. And all they're trying to do is continue their education. And the fact that in this country we continue to leave them in legal limbo is heart-wrenching for them. I've had meals with various DACA students in my own city as mayor of Tallahassee. We promise to be a supportive community and do what we can to make sure that they feel safe and protected. And now we need Washington and the president and this Congress to finally act on what is right, and I believe what is in the best interest.
And do their job. They need to do
all of us.
They need to do their job because it's not fair for these kids to have their life in limbo. I mean, I can't imagine going to bed at night not knowing the next day if you would be deported or if someone is knocking on your door or can you apply for a loan for graduate school. It's just too much. It's heartbreaking to watch those kids too. So I'm glad that you're on board with that as well. So tell our listeners, Mayor Andrew Gilliam, why do you think you're the best choice for Florida in the Democratic primary?
Well, Sita, my experience having been born in Miami-Dade, Florida, growing up as one of seven kids, the first of my siblings to graduate from high school, the first of my siblings to graduate from college, having grown up under two working class parents, my mother who drove school bus and my daddy who was a construction worker, my lived experience in this state is more like the everyday people who call Florida home than anybody else running. And I don't believe you should have to be able to stroke your own check or be from a famous family in order to serve the great state of Florida. I believe that you can come from my background, be committed to service, have a plan for moving the state forward, and you should have an opportunity to compete as well. And I believe that if we make it through this Democratic nomination race on August 28th, that we will be the best suited candidate to help serve the people of Florida, to transform our economy, to invest in our education system, to confront the challenges of our environment. Too many of us are working in this state and can't make ends meet. And we need a governor who's focused on how it is that we can create the opportunity for people to work one job instead of two and three jobs just to
make. And boy, do I know about that, because I work with nursing assistants who, bless their loving hearts, they have to care for our elderly, and they make $9 or $10 an hour. And then, you know, they have to worry about health insurance and how are they getting their children to school and do they have enough gas in the car. And the thing is, they do work two and three jobs, and we expect them to give us 100% on the job. But honestly, they're working two and three jobs just to put food on the table. So I am so grateful that you said that, because it comes from your heart. And when you say opportunity for all, you're not just talking about economic opportunity, but you're also talking about social changes as well.
That's right.
And to think about
That's
people.
Exactly right.
So I love that about you. So, when we opened the show, I had talked a little bit about what I heard on the news, watching about Stephen Clark in Sacramento, California. And just to segue a little bit, I was going to ask you, what have you done to fight for gun safety legislation?
Yeah, I tell you, first of all of our hearts break for Stephen Clark. I mean, and the truth is that we've got a lot of work to do to reform the criminal justice system, particularly as it interacts with people in communities of color. It should not be that people are losing their lives senselessly holding a cell phone. We know that we've got to also reform gun violence in this state. I have been sued by the NRA because in my city we refused to repeal an ordinance which simply said you cannot shoot guns in city parks, right? I mean, most of us would think of that as basic and common sense. But in the state of Florida, they preserve the rights of individuals to shoot guns and any type of gun wherever they want, whenever they want, over the lives of everyday citizens in this state. And so I believe that we ought to strengthen the background check system. I believe that we ought to put a ban on assault rifles and high-capacity magazines. If you want to shoot a weapon of war, you ought to join the military. Other than that, we should be sure that we don't have these streets of these guns available on our city streets.
I hear you, and I support that 100%, because, you know, a lot of people want to use these weapons, but they don't want to serve. And they don't want to join,
right.
And they should. If they want to, they should. And Bill here from the Coast Guard, who was in the Navy, is giving you a high five.
Well, Bill, thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. And you know well that the consequential impacts of these kinds of weapons, we know that they are the weapons of choice for many of the mass shootings that have taken place across this state and across this country. Our men and women in the armed services, our men and women in law enforcement, these are individuals who get training. These are individuals who, when they take out a life in the course of their duty, have to get counseling to make sure that they're able to recuperate from that kind of a traumatic event. And these are individuals, as I said, who are trained to do it.
And I tell you, Governor,
on everyday street?
For our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mayor Andrew Gilliam. He's calling in to speak about why he's thrown his hat in the race for the Florida Democratic primary nomination. And we're just having a really nice conversation about all the issues that he stands on, some of them being the economy and jobs, healthcare, education, environment, women's rights, criminal justice reform, immigration, LGBTQ equality, and we're talking about gun safety with him as well. But I just wanted to say to you, as a nurse, I mean, there's also an economic cost associated with gunshot and gun violence as well. I mean, we all know what we have to do when someone gets a shot, and the psychological changes that the patient as well as the family goes through as well. And like you say, we don't have enough resources to counsel the mother and the brother and the grandma and the community, and whereas the military does. Yeah, that's a good point, Ms.
Ellen. That's exactly right.
So
you hit on an important point, which is why I am an advocate for looking at gun violence as a public safety and a public health issue, which oftentimes we've ignored it as, you know, bad people doing bad things or one-off incidences that don't paint the complete picture. Well, the epidemic of gun violence in this country is pervasive, and it's pervasive regardless of the kind of communities that we're talking about. And so we've got to address this as a public health crisis. And to your point, as a nurse and a caregiver yourself, I also believe that we've got to expand Medicaid in this state to 1.5 million of the most medically needy people in Florida. Our failure to do so has cost the state of Florida and last year's budget alone about $6 billion that we would have otherwise pulled down from D.C. that we never pulled down, and it got distributed to other states.
Well, thank you for touching on that as well. And we were just, Ellen and Bill and I were just talking about our beaches here, just to segue a little bit. Bill had a question about the beach, and we were saying something that you were saying.
Yeah, Mayor, I'm curious about this new law that's been passed that's effectively privatizing beaches. Who's going to pay for beach replenishment if these are now privately owned beaches?
Yeah, my guess is they're still going to look to the public purse to take care of that responsibility. Those individuals, private citizens, certainly will not be able to bear the cost of it. But you know what? There is an assault on our public lands. There's already been an assault on the environment. Governor Rick Scott says he's not a scientist, and therefore he can't say whether or not global warming is real. Never mind that we're closing down streets in Miami-Dade and Miami Beach because of high tide, which is a natural occurrence. We've turned over the health and welfare of our lands, our water bodies, the Lake Okeechobee, the Floridan Aquifer, the Everglades. Turn the responsibility of that over to developers and people who only seek profit. And very similarly, with regard to our beaches, beach erosion, our need to protect our natural bodies, as well as, in my opinion, make sure that we're protecting inland properties by making sure that we include protection of our beaches and the hardening of our beaches, such that as global warming and climate change continue to persist in this state, that we have some as you would, land to help protect us, particularly on our coastline.
Yeah,
we've got to pay close attention to what you raise, especially during this Republican administration where they continue to turn over public property to private landowners.
Well, you know, here in Brevard, we had that situation with the fish kill. And all of a sudden, the algae blooms, and all of a sudden we go to the Publix and everything, and the grocery stores are everywhere, and everybody's wearing a mask. It seems as though only when your eyes become red, or there's something with Ebola or something like that, then you see everybody else getting involved, and the press is hyping it up. But, I mean, the everyday person who's looking at what's going on with our lands and actually paying attention, there's trouble brewing out there, and people are not paying attention. So, Governor, Mayor Andrew Gilliam,
Freudian
slip. You see that?
That's
wonderful. So, you know, I was just thinking, how do we reach more people to get our message out? Because it seems as though some people are so laid back that they don't really care, even though they live on the water and there's a lot of muck in the water, they just don't care. They care that their house value's up, they have a big boat, they have a yacht, their children are in private schools, but guess what? Behind your backyard, there's trouble brewing in the water. So how do we get more people to pay attention, not just to your race that you're running for the governor for the state of Florida in the Democratic primary, but to listen to the messages about what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, we've got to continue to move around the state. We've got to continue to talk to folks. This opportunity to speak with your listeners is extremely helpful. Obviously, we're a state of 20 million people. I mean, we're bigger than most states out there, right?
Yes.
And so that presents a very unique challenge for us. In this Democratic primary race, we think there are going to be about a million point four voters. We've got to get our share of it. There are four of us that are competing, and you're talking about a nominee who may emerge on the low end with 33% of the vote. We think it'll be closer to 37-39%, but essentially, we've got to get our piece of the pie. If we become the nominee, I have no doubt that this race will not only be statewide known, it'll be nationalized, because we're Florida, one of the most important states in the union, the largest swing state out there and available, and not only that, we'll have a U.S. Senate race that'll also be competitive here. So I'm confident that we'll be able to continue to get around and communicate, but it's going to be venues like this. We're running a grassroots campaign. We've got over 20,000 contributions into our campaign, and we're building that every day with people giving $5 and $10 and $20. To be quite honest, my mother is one of those $20 givers. She's on an automatic monthly deduct of $20.18. She wants to sow a seed into this race, and we want to invite
you know what we like about you? You know what we like about you? And we've heard you speak in person. We, meaning me and some of the friends that I have that have heard you speak, is you know where you came from and you know where you're going.
Absolutely.
And people like you who have taken advantage of the public school education and have taken the opportunity no matter what, and you've taken it and you're doing great things for our world and our nation. You are the kind of person that when we see you, we want our children to be just like you. So what is your stand on public education?
I'm a huge defender of public education. And in fact, having, as you mentioned, been a recipient of the public system all the way through, it is, aside from my parents and my grandmother, it was my public school teachers who inspired me, who helped to shape me, who told me I could when I didn't think I could, who pushed me harder when I thought that I had reached my limits. These are the same people who right now we call evil. We say that our kids are attending failure factories. We pay our teachers in the state of Florida starting salaries. We're among the lowest of the 50 states. When it comes to quality, the state of Florida is pulling up the rear. We've got to do better. Our kids deserve better. And in my opinion, we've got to begin earlier. 0 to 5 is where it's at. And we need to make sure that our kids have access to high-quality early learning. Over 90% of brain development that happens over the course of human life takes place between the ages of 0 and 5. And so we've got to make sure that our kids get access to high-quality early learning. And our state is the agency that regulates that. Then we need to pay teachers what they're worth. We have proposed a $50,000 starting salary for teachers, and we've also proposed a way to pay for it. And then we believe that we've got to decrease the number of high-stakes tests. These are tests that don't tell us what our kids know, but how well they take a test. That is not an indicator for how well our kids are doing or how well our schools are doing. We've got to obviously measure our kids, but we can do that the way I was measured. We had tests every week, every other week, and it measured our gradual growth to make sure we had comprehension of a subject matter, not to see how well we could take a high-stakes standardized test. And then finally, I'll say we've got to reinfuse apprenticeships. When I was going through school, it was woodwork, shop, mechanical, electrical, technical.
Yeah, vocational.
Program. We've got to reinfuse that into our public education system for the other half of our kids who are not on their way to community college or to university, that they get a skill they could monetize, go to work, get a job, and earn a good wage.
And also, Mayor Gilliam, we also need to give the families the tools that they need to be successful at home, things like Medicaid and making sure that our communities are all treated equally, because, you know, we expect children to do well in school, but if a child is hungry at school and he's worrying about what mom and dad is doing at home, or a sick parent that they can't afford their medication, I mean, it does put a burden on the child in school. So I always say that if you want our children to do well, you have to look at the communities they come from and look at the home. We want parents to take personal responsibility for children, but we also have to give them the tools that they need to be a good parent. Education is important, and on the broad spectrum, we're talking about education academically as well as comprehensive sex education at appropriate ages as well. So I just want to say, you know, it's not, you have to look at it from all angles. And we also have a question for you, of course, about the XL Keystone Pipeline. So let me throw that in there as well, because I know our time is limited and people care about the environment and they care about what's going on, because we want to leave our footprint on the earth for the next generation so that our children
want a clean footprint.
Ellen said a clean footprint. So where do you stand on big oil pipelines like the Keystone XL that might hurt the ecosystem in our beautiful Florida?
Yeah, well, I'm against the Keystone Pipeline. I'm also against the Sable Trail Pipeline. Unfortunately, one of my opponents in the Democratic primary race, Congresswoman Gwen Graham, voted for the Keystone Pipeline. And I believe that it is not only a danger as it stretches across the continental United States, we also have to be careful about the fact that we're trying to lean into the future of energy, the future of technology. We've got to expand our thinking around how it is that we power our communities. And in my opinion, we ought to be doing what we did in Tallahassee. The same week that Donald Trump pulled out of the Paris Accord and my city as mayor, I broke ground on a 120-acre solar farm that will triple the amount of solar energy that we produce. We've got to do that across the state. We're the Sunshine State, and we ought to make it mean something to be from the Sunshine State. We also ought to be equipping our universities with research and development dollars so that they can be at the cutting edge of technology to help us lean into a green future economy, and not the fossil fuels and the damaging energy sources of the past, but to lean into the future and innovate for the future. And I believe that there's a great wealth of jobs that exist around the bend if we were to choose to lean into the future economy.
Well, I tell you, I've been seeing a lot of stuff that the Indians and Chinese are doing with green energy, and it's amazing. I remember as a little girl when we went to Hindu prayers, we would eat our food on a leaf. And all of a sudden, my brother sends me something that in India, they're actually taking those leaves and making plates and cups and bowls with them now.
Wow.
I'm like, wow. My mother and father was on the cutting edge of the green energy before anybody else was. But
yes. You know what? It's funny. A lot of, in this state, a lot of poor families tend to be out of a place of need, right? Not
yes.
of luxury, but because it's what you got, and you got to make it work.
Yeah, we were recycling way before it became famous, you know. But one more question before we let you go, Mayor Andrew Gilliam, here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on WWBC AM 1510 and FM 99.9, FM 94.7, and FM 100.7. We have a lot of stations now.
That's good.
We have a question about healthcare, and the person wants to know what can be done to improve the accuracy of the Social Security database used for Medicare and Medicaid.
You know, I tell you, that's a first for me. I mean, my assumption would first have to be that we've got to, unlike, you know, when we were born, certainly when I was born, we've got to digitize. And I think we've already seen some of the digital revolution coming in many of our hospitals, but so many of them are under-resourced for the kind of technology wave that is now taking over American, but also global society. I believe through creating a digital footprint of every individual and ensuring that our hospitals, our clinic, our neighborhood health services, and otherwise are equipped with the resources that they need to begin digitizing records in such a way that we can increase accuracy. I've got family members who, quite frankly, they've got different names connected to, you know, Social Security cards because a nurse or someone in the hospital may have misspelled it and have spent, you know, you now have licenses and identification cards that are somehow incompatible with Social Security numbers.
That's right.
We've got to fix
the database, yeah.
Digital footprint.
Well, and that all goes back to education, because if you have an educated society and you have people who are doing their jobs and paying attention because they had a proper education, they would be able to do all these things in their capacity within their job descriptions. Because I know one of my patients was complaining recently that the medical assistant who drew his blood, that she had poked him a few times. And I nicely said to him, I said, well, I'll tell you what, do you believe in public education? He said, not really. I said, why not? He said, because I just think people should go to private schools. And I said, well, guess what? That person who just drew your blood, it's possible she went to a public school, but they don't have proper funding for it. So I said, let's be honest. When you get older, you need the younger people to take care of you. So we all need to be supporting our public schools, our environment. Social issues tops everything else. It's good to make money, but at the same time, you have to look at everybody and where they're coming from as well. And so we're very grateful for all the things that you care about, just like us, the economy and jobs and healthcare, education, the environment, women's rights, immigration reform, LGBTQ equality, and gun safety. And I know Ellen is nodding her head. So we are so grateful that you took the time to call in for us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
I'm honored. I want to thank you all very much again for the opportunity. And I know you know this, as do your listeners. This is all, you know, in order for us to have a good economy, we've got to have good education, good health, good environment. All of this stuff feeds each other.
We're a global village. We have to take care of each other from infancy to the time when the good Lord takes us home. We all are in this together.
And we have to take our station break now. Thank you so much. Thank you for calling in. And we're going to take a quick station break, and we'll be hearing from our sponsors. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Thank you.
The Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, Enso, and more. Brand new, warranties as well. And delivery and haul away available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473. 2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here on sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7, as well as our AM channel, AM 1510 WWBC. It's nice to have all 4 stations and repeat all 4. If you say it really fast, you can mix it up.
Right.
You'll say all different numbers. So our first segment was with the Mayor Andrew Gilliam, who's running on the Democratic primary for governor. And we spoke about some interesting topics and issues, things that affect everyone.
Absolutely.
We are in a global world, in a global village, and we're linked by technology, too.
That's right. You know, and it's a good spot to plug the fact that we do offer everybody who's running. If you have some message to give out, we'd love to have you on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Yes, I tend to tell everyone, whether you're running as a Republican or a Democrat or independent or anything like that, feel free to come on the show. His segment, of course, was paid for by Friends.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise, we would say was paid by his campaign. I just meet all these awesome people as I travel around attending events, and I invite them to come on the show, actually not as a politician sometimes, but as just a person who wants to do great things for our community and our state and make a difference, right? And one of those people I met was our friends at the Marine Resource Council, and he invited me to have one of... who was it who invited?
Steve Sharkey.
Steve Sharkey introduced me to Bill Cox, and Bill is currently the local public affairs officer for the Coast Guard Auxiliary. Ellen said to put the G in there.
Auxiliary. It's easier to remember.
He also handles the navigation services. Bill also serves on the boards of the Marine Resource Council and with the Military Officers Association of America's local Canaveral chapter. He is a veteran retired from the Navy Reserve With 25 years of service, Bill and his family lives beachside. And boy, he was boasting about his beach area being so beautiful.
That's right.
I know that for a fact because I lived in Satellite Beach and it is beautiful.
Yeah.
So we have a couple of PSAs that Ellen would make later as well.
We just wanted to remind everybody about Earth Day. On April 21st, we had Jenny Battig here a few weeks ago where she was talking from Unity of Melbourne. There is a free admission event. There are going to be giveaways, raffle prizes, and lots of sponsors that are there. So that's Saturday, April 21st, 2018. It's going to be at Unity of Melbourne, which is at 2401 North Harbour City Boulevard. And the time is from 10 to 4. And once again, it's a free event. So if you want to learn about how to reduce your carbon footprint, this is the place to go. And certainly we'll be talking a little bit about that as well when we talk about beaches and...
So for listeners who are tuning in, we have a very fine man sitting next to us in a Coast Guard uniform, but he was in the Navy. So Bill is going to tell us a little bit about his background and himself. So go ahead, Bill, tell us a little bit about your Navy career and how you got involved in the Coast Guard Auxiliary.
Thanks. Well, I'd like to focus more on the Coast Guard.
There you go.
Anyway, I moved here. My wife is from the area. She grew up here. And looking for things to do, I found the auxiliary. Of all the nation's armed forces or military services, the Coast Guard is the only military service that has a volunteer component. So I was able to go into back into service, so to speak, make a lot of great friends, and I was particularly interested in learning about boating. And we do a lot of boating here locally in the Coast Guard Auxiliary. And we turn people who may have grown up on the water into really just master navigators, master craftsmen when it comes to operating a boat. The experience is wonderful. And we do a lot of other things, too, that I'd like to talk about today.
So what exactly is the Coast Guard Auxiliary?
So the Coast Guard Auxiliary is a volunteer component. One-third of the Coast Guard's uniformed and strength are auxiliaries. We're volunteers. We do as much as we can or as little as we want to. But we serve the Coast Guard. A lot of us are operationally integrated into the Coast Guard's day-to-day activities here at Port Canaveral. But we also do a lot of things back on the river as far as patrols, search and rescue, boating safety. We do vessel safety checks, courtesy checks in neighborhoods or out on docks or on the water to basically help people make sure they're compliant and learn about what good practices are on the water. We have public education courses. We teach boating safety courses in Titusville, Palm Bay, and up at the port.
And there's a large population of people that have boats, obviously, around here, right? What is it, in Brevard County?
Yeah, in Florida, we've got almost 2 million boats. This is everything from paddleboards and kayaks and canoes to yachts. 2 million. In Brevard County, we've got about 33,000 registered boats. It's a huge number of boats here in the county. And we want to make sure all those boaters are safe.
Right. And what kind of people join?
The auxiliary is a mixed bag. We take anybody age 17 or older. You have to be a U.S. citizen or have a green card. And so you're joining the military, but you never leave Brevard County.
Right.
So the nice thing is you can sign up. The Coast Guard does do a check on you, and they make sure you're okay for Coast Guard duty. But once that happens, you get a Coast Guard employee ID number, and you're in.
So there are a lot of benefits, too.
It's a lot of fun. There are a lot of benefits. The training is probably the most important. So you pick a Coast Guard career field that matches your interests, and all of that Coast Guard training is open to you. So it's really fascinating. And then, you know, for some people it might be a way to improve, especially for younger people, improve their resume, because they can get federal courses, they can get Coast Guard training that just looks good on a job application. And they're in a Coast Guard uniform earning Coast Guard decorations. So that's kind of neat, too, if you're a young person building a career and building that personal resume. For older people like me, it's a great way to keep serving. It was an excuse to pull my rack of ribbons out of the sock drawer and put them back on and add to them. So.
Oh, yeah, and spend more time on the water. Poor you.
That's true. Yes. You get to go boating on other people's boats.
So boating safety is a national issue. What can you tell us about this locally?
Well, I can tell you that Florida is the worst performing state nationally as far as boating accidents and boater deaths. Every day on the water here in Florida, every day nationally, two boaters die.
We never hear about it.
I know we don't.
You know, the messages get lost for what's very, very important at times. That's pretty important for us to know, because I lived on the river in Tortoise Island for almost 25 years of my life, and a lot of our neighbors were so excited to show us the big yachts and boats that they would buy, but none of them had training. I know that for a fact, because I would see the Coast Guard come and rescue in a few of them, one of them being my husband at one point, too. So I'm just saying that it's important that we talk about things like this, and that's why it's important to have shows like Viewpoint with Sita and Friends that spread this invaluable information.
It's very true, and you get a lot of people on the water who probably need to learn a lot more about what they're doing. And for a variety of reasons, it doesn't happen, but we're doing a lot locally to try to turn that situation around. At the high school level now, we're reaching out to all the junior ROTC units, and they get the About Boating Safely class, the ABS class, for free. And the class, when we teach it or the Power Squadron teaches it, it's normally about a $40 class. It's a day long. At the end of that class, you get your Florida boater's ID. Everybody under 30, everybody born after 1988, has to have that ID on them if they're stopped by the sheriff or FWC or any other law enforcement agency on the water.
And so FWC and obviously law enforcement, that's all local, but the Coast Guard is federal, correct?
Correct. And we
so
have a law enforcement.
Yeah.
The Coast Guard also has a law enforcement mission, but we don't have many people. So you're not going to see us as much because we're such a small service. We're so thinly spread across hundreds of federal requirements. So the Coast Guard's very active in the port. As far as doing rescues at sea and far out at sea, the Coast Guard there has primary responsibility. The auxiliary, which I'm part of, we participate in patrols inside the port, but you'll also see us a lot on the river, and we're out there primarily for safety, to help boaters if they get into trouble, to report things we see, and we need more of a presence. We need more people to come on board and join the auxiliary.
So is there a website that they can go on to and look up and join?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. The best way to find us is to just type in U.S. Coast Guard or Coast Guard Brevard. And if you type in Coast Guard Brevard, Florida, we pop up. And there are three flotillas. The largest flotilla, and the one I belong to, is 17-6. And once you get to that website, you can navigate around. We've got
navigate is the key word here.
Yeah,
you know, you remind me of something. Oftentimes, we see the presence of the Coast Guard when someone goes missing on a boat. Like I remember when those two young fellas took off with no experience on their boat. I mean, we were thrilled. Then the news carried all the little clips of the Coast Guard in the water looking for these children. So, I mean, do you remember that incident?
I do. It was tragic, and they left without any communications devices or signaling devices, and so they were truly lost at sea. One thing I'd like to mention is if you've got a cell phone, you can go to the App Store and just type in United States Coast Guard or USCG, and there's a free app you can download. Everybody should download it. And it's not only got all the boating safety information, current weather information, everything you'd want to know about boating, but there's a red button, a red bar at the bottom of that app. And if you press it, it gives you your latitude, longitude, where you currently are, and then you can press a button for call the Coast Guard or call 911.
Amazing where we've come with technology.
Yeah, and back on the river, that's such a critical app, because if you're out kayaking or canoeing or on a paddleboard and you get disoriented, you get lost, the weather changes, you can go to that app because you've got your cell phone on you and you can call for help.
You know,
well, I just posted that flotilla 17-6 district.
Well, thank you very much.
That is
Ellen.
On our Facebook page.
You know, I remember once, I think it was maybe about 10 years ago, 4th of July, we were all in our boats lined up on the Ogalle Causeway to watch the fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember our anchor, all of a sudden, I mean, we knew the weather was turning, but nobody knew it was going to happen that quickly. And I remember all the boats started swaying and our anchor got caught in somebody else's. And then it spun our little boat around. And it was a mess out there. And so everybody was calling the Coast Guard. And the Coast Guard came out. And I bet maybe Bill was one of the people in the auxiliary that came out there. But they had to tow us to land and, you know, tow the boats in. But, boy, I remember that day. And, you know, a lot of those, the people on those boats, who they did not have the driver education that they should have.
Right, right. And so
The boating safety.
It's really important to remember that if anything ever does go bad on the water, it usually goes really bad. And so that's why it's so important to be safe. There's some things to remember. A lot of boating accidents, we find the five following components in most accidents. One, there's overconfidence. People just are overconfident. They don't have life vests on. They're not thinking about safety. A lot of inexperience. A lot of people only get on the water, you know, once or twice a year. It's not uncommon. Lack of situational awareness. There's no lookout posted. They don't see the boats that are coming at them or the jet skis or whatever. They don't notice the kayak
or
the swimmer in the
water. Well, that's
because
of the overconfidence, I think.
Yeah.
Or the alcohol.
Well, and then and there you get into the inability
alcohol.
To comprehend.
Right, exactly.
So some of that
you
maybe just
gave them a whale.
Yeah. We had an experience last year in the port, and we had four auxiliary members decorated by the Coast Guard for heroism, and they were able to get a boat out of the way of an oncoming tanker, and they were within probably 2 minutes
of a collision. I remember
that.
That was
it was a big deal. And what was interesting is the two people on the boat, they rarely went out boating.
Right.
The boat was badly maintained. When our patrol boat went up and we tied off on one of their cleats to tow them out of the way, the cleat came out.
Right.
So we literally had one of our crew members hanging on to their gunwale, to the side of their boat, and physically holding that boat while we pulled it out of harm's way. Otherwise, that could have been a collision. Two people could have died.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is that the five or were there more? Did you go through all five?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
And of course, the alcohol as well. So when we see you all out there patrolling, especially in Central Brevard, what are you actually doing?
We're looking mostly for safety, and we're trying to make sure people are safe. If there's any glaring violations, the station will hear about it, and they may choose to pass that on to law enforcement. But we're there primarily for safety. So we're looking to help people. There was one very comical rescue that happened just by us being at the right place, right time a few years ago. There was a young couple out on a small boat, and both of them were obviously probably impaired. Anyway, the girl ended up falling out of the boat, and her boyfriend didn't even notice.
Oh.
And our guys had been watching, and they went over there, were able to find her and pull her out and save her life.
Wow.
And but again, one half of the boating deaths occur from people falling out of boats. And a lot of times, the guy driving the boat doesn't realize it's happened.
Sometimes they're probably going too fast.
Or it can be they're getting underway.
Yes,
and as they
right.
get underway, somebody standing in the back didn't realize it. And over they go. And you don't know it. It's loud. It's noisy.
I mean, you know, my son and his friends used to go tubing, and they would tie this tube to the boat. And I thought they were going too fast sometimes, but people would say, oh, no, that's a normal speed. Mm-hmm. But even that's dangerous, because if you fall out of that, somebody has to go back and get you.
Yeah, and if you're pulling a skier or a tube or anything, you need to have a person who's looking back behind,
yes.
who's doing that lookout, and can immediately tell the driver, stop. Let's go back and get them. They're in the water.
So, Bill, I'm just thinking, were you guys ever called from the Coast Guard or the Coast Guard Auxiliary to help in delivering birds?
I'm sure that's happened.
Because when they said, share some stories, I'm just thinking, you know, there are some people that would think, well, I'm not due yet. Let's just go on the boat.
What's
right?
interesting
that's
is...
That's such a nurse thing to ask,
yes.
Sita.
There are
or
a
having
lot of,
a stroke or heart attack, sure.
Well, there are a lot of medical emergencies at sea here in Florida. And the Coast Guard's very active in going out. And that's usually when the Coast Guard aircraft go out, the helicopters. And they'll evacuate people back to a hospital because they're having a medical condition. And, that goes on a lot.
So would you say being part of the Coast Guard Auxiliary, would you say it is dangerous or not? Because people are probably listening and tuning in. I mean, we've got... And also, after we're going to ask him about the branches of the military as well. That was so interesting the way Bill explained all of that to us in the beginning, right? In our green room, right?
Right.
So tell us, is it dangerous?
You know, boating is inherently dangerous. So when you get on a dock, that's where the accidents can begin that can be fatal. You can fall off the dock, strike your head. And we had a guy last year at the port, I think a construction worker, somebody who fell off a wharf there.
Off a scaffolding.
And 2 hours later, they found the body. So boating, yes, it's very dangerous. We also have a component of the Coast Guard Auxiliary, which is our air component. So we have private airplane owners who maintain their aircraft to Coast Guard standards. They get Coast Guard communications equipment on board their aircraft. And they do patrols as well.
It's
and
such
that
teamwork.
Could be dangerous.
You know, it's such teamwork with them.
Oh, it's
fun. It's all coordinated. It's beautiful the way it's coordinated. If you want to cook, they've got something you could come and be a chef. If you're a retired nurse, a retired physician, if you're an engineer, whatever you're looking for, they've got a little spot for you in this group of the Coast Guard Auxiliary. I think it's wonderful.
And talking about paying back to giving your community back to society. And
it is. And for people who got maybe caught up in their career, they always wanted to go in the military but never got that chance. It just never seemed right. This might be a great way to join the military by joining the Coast Guard Auxiliary. You never have to leave Brevard County. But there's Coast Guard training offered nationwide. And once you get into a career field that you enjoy, you can take advantage of some of those training opportunities,
too. So I have a question. So why do we always hear so much about the Marines, but we never hear enough about the Coast Guard? I mean, and sometimes you look at the poster, right? It's like, join the Marines, and there's an arm out or, you know, something like that. And you never hear enough about the Navy or the Coast Guard. Why is that, Bill?
Well, I guess the problem is the Marines have the better uniforms.
Men in uniform.
Do you have a grunting thing in the Coast Guard like the Marines?
You know, don't really say hoorah or anything. No, no. Coast Guard's too dignified. I will say that.
Oh, boy.
I've worked with all the services, and by far the best educated people. Just a really great group to work with, you know, all the time has been the Coast Guard. I'm really impressed with the quality of the people. And their commitment.
But just think from a citizen standpoint of just getting that education and all of the things that are going on in the state of Florida around, you know, fracking and just, you know, just maritime rules and expectations in general. I mean, we're just surrounded by it. So it just really improves the ability of the citizens that are involved with the auxiliary to be able to speak, you know, to speak intelligently about some of the issues that are going on.
And there are a lot. I mean, we just talked to Andrew Gilliam about a few of the things that are going on.
For instance, and I tell people, instead of just having a bark, you can also have a bite.
That's right.
What I mean by that is, for instance, we've got an area with the Marine Safety Detachment where auxiliary members are training up to become environmental pollution responders. So when a call comes in and the active duty Coast Guard is already committed elsewhere, we can go out and assess problems and see if...
First line of defense
Of
thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're filling that role. Most of us get HAZWOPR training where we're taught how to help isolate an environmental incident on the water. And so we're a very important component of that.
Be challenging at times, too.
Very challenging, and there's a lot we have to learn, and we have to train to Coast Guard standards. So we're held to very high standards, but the training is fascinating. The trick is to get into a career field that you're interested in. It could be instructing. We have a lot of demand just for instructors who are willing to deliver Coast Guard courses.
I have a friend who's a pilot, and he just retired, and his name is Bill also. I might be giving him this information later.
Sounds like you could use him too. We've got pilots who are on boat crew because they really just want a boat.
Right.
We've got pilots who are in the auxiliary air side. Auxiliary air has got a lot of very demanding training requirements because you're a Coast Guard aviator. But some guys are just observers, and they're qualified as observers on patrol aircraft. Other guys are the assistant pilots. They may not want to be the pilot in command anymore. So a lot of opportunities for current aviators or former aviators.
And
or
you
people
said a list
world.
Of career opportunities for people to have that experience.
Yeah, we do absolutely everything in the Coast Guard except we don't do law enforcement. Mm-hmm. We don't carry a gun. We don't fight wars.
So we don't get deployed.
Well, you know, besides putting on the uniform one more time and all the decorations there, what's the best thing that happened to you since you joined the auxiliary?
I guess for me, the best thing's just been getting a whole new group of really great friends. And the camaraderie I used to enjoy in the old days when I was in the service, I've got that again. And it's just a great group of people from a vast array of backgrounds.
What about food? Everybody who has a group, they always have like a big potluck. Do you have anybody that actually makes the curry chicken and rice? Do you have any Indians there or people from the islands?
The head of our professional education program is Barbadian by background, but he's a retired Air Force colonel and a great guy. And so we've got a lot of interesting people with a lot of interesting backgrounds.
Any events coming up that you want to share with our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends?
Thank you. Every month we have boating safety classes. Look those up on the web. On the 5th of May, we've got a recreational boating safety day at Satellite Beach. And bring your boat. We'll inspect it. We've got a free boating safety class, normally $40. That day it's free to the first 30 who sign up. Check with the Satellite Beach Recreation Department.
And maybe where people buy boats, you should have a big poster up there or a sign of some sort. Don't just buy it because you want to show off to your friends what you can afford in your backyard, but actually get a class before you get on it. Because how many people we know, I mean, it's about keeping up with the Joneses. I mean, you buy a house on the river, and so your friend have a boat, and so you want one as well. But you didn't take the time to learn boating instruction and safety, and you get on the water, but you're putting everybody's life at risk as well as your own and your family.
Almost sounds like gun control.
Yeah, but no, and you want to bring your family with food and all that, but you're putting your family at risk as well. Yeah.
Well, and your family should take the class. It's an 8-hour class. It's a lot of fun. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, you know, I remember when we had our boat, the first one was a Chris Craft, a 27-foot Chris Craft with a cabin and everything. And I always said to my husband, I need that downstairs because I'm not coming out in the hot sun, you know.
Right.
But then he sold that one and he says the happiest day of his life was the day he bought the boat. And then the second happiest day was the day he sold the boat.
Yeah.
And then he ended up getting another one and he called it a mistake.
Oh, boy. Was
but
that
you know
the name
what
of the
I
boat?
Like, though? There's a lot of fancy names on those boats out there. I mean,
some very funny names, too.
Have you ever seen any that stood out in your mind?
Yeah, but most of them are a little probably borderline. But they're very creative.
Yes. I also enjoy the boat parade as well. I mean, that's one of the things that our neighbors would all get involved decorating their boats for Christmas. And they would have all the beautiful lights with the Santa Claus. And Ellen, talking about alcohol, a lot of those Santas were tipping on those boats sometimes.
Yeah. That's part of the problem.
Yes, for sure.
Well, once again, it's been another fantastic episode of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you, Bill Cox, for joining us today. And certainly all of our listeners out there, if you want to learn more about the Coast Guard Auxiliary, you can contact Bill Cox at 321-338-5050. I've posted the website so that you can find out a little bit more about the Coast Guard Auxiliary. And remember, everybody, about
Earth
Day.
And it doesn't matter which branch of government, they're military they're from.
Correct.
Let me see if I know all five. The Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines, and the Coast Guard.
Very good.
All of them.
Excellent
job. So just join if you want to give back to our beautiful Brevard and the waterways. And look out for whoever's littering. Write your name and number down and give it to us.
There you go. And we will have more great guests next week. Make sure to tune in here on AM 1510 WWBC and Viewpoint with Sita and Friends next Monday at 1.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
We bow down and confess you are in this place. We bow down and confess you are Lord in this place. You are all I need. It's your face I see in the presence of your light. We bow down, we bow down, we bow down and confess.